can tell that you can hear me. My name's Eliah Vargas, and hopefully you can hear in the background just a little bit the sound of the water. And the sound of my own voice as a feedback with the radio signal is just a little confusing to me, so I'm going to stay over here. I'm an artist from Oakland, California, and here at Lodge this year I have installed a version of Cloud Points, a derivation of crude illumination that I made in residency at Way Farm last summer. So right now I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. As an artist, I'm interested in the speculative potential or expressive possibilities of different mediums as possible alternative futures, as ways of refiguring the nature of being, as a way of talking about powers, structures of power. So crude illumination, if you were here and you could see it, is about 130 feet of steel pipeline through which there is a product called crude oleum, which is a Pennsylvania crude oil scalp treatment, 100% Pennsylvania crude oil, being transmitted through the pipe as a feedback loop. The crude oil becomes part of the signal path of the transmission, which is sent through a hydrophone in a pit of oil that sends a signal to a radio transmitter, and there is a roving radio receiver that signal is sent to, in turn sent back to a local receiver and to a transducer on the pipeline, which vibrates the pipeline. Without seeing that, I'm sure that that is not clear at all, and I am staring right at it, so I have a vantage point that you do not if you are listening to me on the radio. So I'm going to tell you about why this installation is important and why I made it. I've been thinking about crude oil as a material and as a mythology for some time, and specifically I've been thinking about a particular hydrocarbon in crude oil called paraffin. This hydrocarbon occurs in our blood. It occurs in a lot of the ecological world around us. It is in plants. The world is by and large made up of hydrocarbons, so there's nothing particularly remarkable about this. And yet, in the early history of oil production, this hydrocarbon became a material that advanced simultaneously the narrative of crude oil as a fossil fuel, but also crude oil as a form of spiritual healing. In 1859, this is the year of the first crude oil pipeline in Pennsylvania, and when I was thinking about talking about this project here in upstate New York, and I say that, like I said, as an artist who's from the West Coast, I became aware of what it means to talk about oil, specifically crude oil, in different places. What does it mean to talk about crude oil here in upstate New York? What does it mean? I'm sorry for those of you from upstate New York just clumping this whole region together. What does it mean to talk about crude oil in Pennsylvania? I'll be in Pennsylvania in about a week to do more research and more work with crude oil as a material. And I think this hones in on a point that is at the crux of what this work is doing, which is to say, how do we understand what oil is, and how does that understanding impact the ways that oil is, or the way that oil saturates throughout our contemporary world. So 1859 is the first year of successful crude oil commercial extraction at this place called Drake Oil Well in Titusville, Pennsylvania. And shortly after that, the first crude oil pipeline occurs just east at a place called Oil Creek. Oil Creek is an area that was decimated by oil production immediately after oil was discovered there. And now Oil Creek is a state park in Pennsylvania and is a second growth forest. And you would only know that there is a history of oil production there because of the artifacts of the landscape. It becomes a place where oil is perhaps a form of tourism. It is a part of the cultural heritage of this location. So one of the things I'm interested in is how does thinking about the materiality of crude oil and the expressive possibilities of crude oil as a material shape or inform the future trajectories of the networks that that oil takes on? So what ways does the location where crude oil pipelines were laid impact the sort of information flow that moved through those landscapes? And over time, how did different information networks graft onto those pre-established crude oil infrastructure? So there are generally accepted histories of crude oil, something called crude oil path dependencies, where you have a pipeline that is built for whatever particular reasons, is built in a certain location, and then over time, other infrastructure is built on top of that. You have perhaps a railroad that is laid next to where the crude oil pipeline is because land right was already established, because the geography of the landscape was already prepared. And over the past 150 years, 170 years or so since Drake Oil Well in Pennsylvania, a lot of path dependency has continued to occur with telegraph lines, with phone lines, with road pathways, now, say, with fiber optic cables. And I'm interested in thinking about crude oil as a form of information flow that plays a role in how we construct contemporary cultural identity. So the name of this piece is Cloud Points. As I said, cloud point is a technical term in crude oil pipeline development. What it refers to is paraffin waxy buildup cloud point. And more or less, it refers to the viscosity or the density of the hydrocarbon molecule in a pipeline flow. And from a perspective of the poetics of crude oil flow, I'm interested in the way that crude oil has this hydrocarbon as a kind of self-sabotaging mechanism with relationship to the way that humans use crude oil specifically. So at a certain cloud point, the crude oil flow is restricted because paraffin, you're probably familiar with paraffin as a wax, paraffin wax. It is used in a lot of different spaces, as are a lot of different petrochemicals. Cloud point is the way that crude oil pipeline measures whether or not there is waxy buildup in a pipeline. So this is interesting because on the one hand, paraffin is this molecule that plays a role in shaping oil history. It becomes part of the flow of combustible agents in this complex materiality that is crude oil. That is important to human construction, but on the other hand, it also constricts and disables flow after a certain capacity. So I briefly at the beginning mentioned this product, crudoleum, and this is my source for crude oil. When I decided to start working with crude oil, I had to ask this question: where do I get it from? Where do you get crude oil from as a consumer? It's very easy to know what crude oil costs. It's very easy to know the way that the cost of a barrel of crude oil impacts our daily economy. But the capacity as a consumer to own oil, to be able to touch it, to be able to engage with its material self, is by and large not possible. So I asked the internet, where do you buy crude oil? And of course it was Amazon that gave me the answer. There actually were all these old companies that had websites from the mid-90s that sold little, more or less like school experimental kits that you could buy like 2 ounces of crude oil, and maybe it would come with a rock, shale or something like this. So you could see these different states of the various hydrocarbons that are crude oil. I needed a lot more crude oil than that, and eventually I found this product from a company in Pennsylvania. The product, as I said, is called Crudoleum. 100% Pennsylvania crude oil scalp treatment. So that's ridiculous. And I had to ask a whole bunch of other questions. My reason for being interested in finding it in the first place was because of these theoretical frameworks that are talking about paraffin as this thing that bifurcates the potential pathway of crude oil as either a fossil fuel or as a substance for healing. The history of crude oil is a history that's thousands of years old. Humans' experience with crude oil is thousands of years old. And by and large, that history is a history of using crude oil as a medicinal substance, using it as a sealing agent, using it as insulation in people's homes. It isn't until the mid-1800s that there's even this conception of using crude oil as a fossil fuel. And the moment that that happens, the global industry of crude oil drilling explodes. And it's at this moment that these two particular competing narratives, that you can use oil for your body or that crude oil is a combustible energy source that you burn for fuel, one of those narratives gets left behind and we embrace the narrative of crude oil as a combustible fuel. As a result, this other history more or less becomes erased, but also oil saturates our lives now in such a way that it's hard to, one might say, and I would think through someone like Jason Moore, who wrote this book called Capitalism in the Web of Life. And he talks about the way that nature and capitalism co-produce each other. We can talk more about that and a lot deeper theoretical frameworks if you all are interested in doing so. I'm sort of talking about this work in a particularly reduced way, but there are a lot of very specific theoretical framings, both from a perspective of transmission arts and also from a perspective of critical ecologies that kind of informs the making of this work. So these theoretical frameworks make this argument that oil shapes us. And so I thought, let's look at the materiality of oil. What would it mean to think about a material history of oil from the perspective of paraffin as an agent and like human society as an expression of crude oil? So what are the pathways that oil takes? In what ways does the way that humans imagine crude oil as a combustible fuel, thus building pipelines that create a network of ways to share and transmit that oil, what ways does that shape the capacity for humans as an expression of it? And in turn, looking for a source to explore this, I find this product, Crudoleum, which was invented by a man named Edgar Cayce in the late 1800s, who is by and large known as the father of the New Age movement. He was known as the sleeping prophet. He would go into this trance state and give readings to people. And one of the things that he said is, if you are losing your hair, then you should put crude oil on your head and your hair will regrow. And one of the things that he said that makes this so is that the paraffin hydrocarbon is good for the hair lobe or something of this sort. So here it is again, paraffin being imagined as this form of an agent of spiritual healing, and it's hinging on these particular hydrocarbons. And specifically, he cites Pennsylvania crude oil because apparently Pennsylvania crude oil is rich in paraffins. So here you have a product that reinforces this sort of speculative narrative of oil as a medicinal substance. And it's the only substance that I can purchase as a consumer at the capacity that I need to really engage with a serious exploration of it. Recently, as I've been continuing this work and on this particular trip that I'm on right now here in New York, I visited the New York version of the Edgar Cayce Institute. There's one in New York. There's one in Virginia Beach. That's the headquarters. And I actually learned on this trip that in the early 1920s, Edgar Cayce actually engaged in trying to buy land to support his spiritual projects by drilling crude oil. And additionally, at this time, that a lot of the people who were hiring him for his clairvoyance were oil prospectors who were interested in divining locations of oil. So this kind of practice of engaging with a spiritual relationship of the earth that's very embedded in the history of oil, a space where we expect, I think, as a non-oil expert, not a geologist, not a hydrologist, nor someone working in the petro industry, there is an expectation that oil is the history of oil is a history of rational science and logic. But embedded in these forces that construct path dependencies, these sort of infrastructural path dependencies that I was discussing before, there are all these points and instances where the reason that decisions were being made had nothing to do with any what we would call rational decision making. So, I actually don't want to say that this is bad. I think it's really interesting to observe that this is a part of the history of something we hold very closely to the way that our economic engine is articulated in the present. The idea that the value of an exchange value in our lives is based around these kind of unstable, mystical relationships with material products that we don't understand is a quite interesting observation to make. So there's a lot more to this project, and I'm conscious of the fact that I'm talking to a radio audience that can't see it, and also to a selection of people who can see it, and I'm trying not to speak to it in a way that's privileges the people who are here and can look at it, but at the same time, it is here and it's a physical thing. So perhaps I'd like to ask a question or two, or see if anyone here has any questions. There's only one microphone, so we might not hear all those questions, but I'd be curious to hear what you all think about this, for lack of better words. Yes. Yeah, so there's a mixture of crude oil and water, and so it's probably partially that. But even still, the crude oil itself that comes as this product, for one, it's very liquidy. It's not viscous at all. When I experienced it for the first time, I expected it to be a lot darker and a lot more viscous. And so I have a semi-good relationship with the people who manufacture this product, and the specific company that manufactures it, actually, they own their own oil well, and that's where they get the oil from. And I've asked them if they would take me to the oil well before, and they've politely declined. But there is a certain opacity to really understanding the process. One of the things I'm trying to do right now is find the original transcript of the reading of Edgar Cayce when he said that this is something that you should do in the first place. And I'm getting very close. I actually know like the number, the way that the logic of the readings take place is they're indexed by these two different numbers that refer to the time that the reading was given and the number of that reading. That doesn't need to make sense, but there's a way to trace, because they're all of his readings are transcribed, and these organization, this particular organization, are sort of the arbiters of that knowledge or of those archives. And so there's a lot of steps still to do to understand it better. And this is one of the things that I'm really interested in doing. Like, why did he think this in the first place? I mean, there might not be an answer. It might just be like, that's what I said when I was in a trance state. But he presumably said other words also, and I want to know what those other words are. And one of them is, it has to be Pennsylvania crude oil. So one, there's, as you, some of you may know, I mean, there's a lot of different types of crude oil, and there's these interesting names, all sorts of different kind of like pet names that are given to different types of crude oil. I did a project last year where I had someone in a book respond to some of my work, and what they did is they designed this series of coffee mugs that had all of these different names that you would think refer to like a cup of Joe or something like this, that are actually different real nicknames for different types of crude oil. And depending on where in the country or where in the world this oil is coming from, the material constitution of it can be quite different. So Pennsylvania crude, rich in paraffins. Maybe when paraffin is in a very liquid state, it maintains a sort of silky constitution. I don't know. The product claims to be 100% Pennsylvania crude oil, unrefined. So it's hard to think through what sort of process. I don't think that it's just taken out of the ground and put into these bottles. Maybe it is, though. Yeah, paraffin is one of thousands of different hydrocarbons that is what oil is made up of. So paraffin is a hydrocarbon. It's a very simple hydrocarbon. There are other hydrocarbons like porphyrin, which is a much more complex hydrocarbon. And even paraffin and porphyrin are both an umbrella for a lot of different, a lot of different types of molecules are called paraffin or called porphyrin. So oil is made up of all of these different hydrocarbons. It is just one of the hydrocarbons that's in oil. It's one of the things that makes oil so persistent in our lives today. The petrochemical industry is capable of synthesizing oil into so many different things because oil is essentially this really complex soup of material molecules. It's really remarkable, in fact. To some extent, it's no wonder that it is such a revered substance. There really isn't another substance that is so compressed into the amount of energy that it is. And one of the things that I'm interested in doing by using the hydrocarbon, paraffin specifically, is saying, look, there is a materiality to this oil that is much more than the metaphor that we tend to use when we say even the word energy, for example. When we say energy, that kind of becomes abstracted. It becomes abstracted in the way that is related to our daily lives. We're like, oh, we think about energy in terms of like needing to fuel our car or like how much energy a plane uses in jet fuel, something like this. The various ways that contemporary life matters itself, really. So another way of thinking about the material constitution of crude oil is through the pathway that these material forces have taken, like hydrocarbons, specifically paraffin, that maybe began being synthesized or photosynthesized by a plant 70 million years ago and then eaten by an herbivore, and then a flood happened, and the decomposition of that hydrocarbon fell into deep water, and that water was undisturbed for a really long period of time and got pressurized by the water that it was underneath and turned into a gas and then turned into a solid and then turned into a liquid. That's a very crude pathway that those hydrocarbons took to become oil. So I think something happens when we think about it as a earth material rather than related to the network of cultural technology or as an element that informs the need for contemporary society. We have a very bad relationship with not imagining the materiality of oil at the moment. And it is part of what enables oil to be abused in the way that it does. So on the one hand, I'm trying to think beyond humans. I'm actually thinking about decentering the human in this sort of relationship, like giving agency to paraffin. Not agency in the way that there is an ethics to decision-making, the way that we think about agency for humans, but agency in the form of paraffin being an actor that matters its reality or matters reality in relationship with an ecology of other material forces that are mattering its reality. And taking seriously that there are a lot of expressive potentials that came out of paraffin as an agent of change in that regard. That, in fact, the way that we use oil now is one potential of paraffin as an agent, and that there are potentially an infinite number of other possibilities that paraffin could produce, and that maybe taking seriously those other potentials could imagine or speculate another set of relationships or ethics to how we build those relationships. That gets more into both the sort of technical ways that I'm thinking about paraffin, but also the poetics of the work itself, I guess. I'll say also this piece, similar to the way that I'm thinking about oil as a constellation of forces, this piece is one of numerous other pieces, each of which are doing their own particular work to re-mythologizing this relationship of oil. So I'm sort of talking across different pieces here and more using the piece as a way of further engaging in the conversation, but also further exploring specific elements of it. The politics and the history of crude oil pipelines is a specific history. The history of paraffin, either related to oil or separate from oil, is another history. The history of the technology of oil drilling itself is another history. The Chinese had like 800 feet deep wells for salt like 2,000 years ago. This well was 39 feet. It was either 39 or 59 feet deep. I forget which. Drake oil well, which is the first commercial oil well in the United States, which began successful drilling in 1859. That drill was 39 or 59 feet deep compared to these 2,000 or 800 feet deep wells the Chinese were drilling. That's like nothing, right? And so the technology there is also a really interesting way of figuring the social and technological forces that allow contemporary Western society to build its own narrative and its own history are contingent on the particular tools and the particular notions of material forces that were available in that history. And oftentimes, those histories are very incomplete and viewed through very specific lenses that are shaped by the forces themselves. So pipelines become a really interesting example of this for me. An oil pipeline both transmits energy, but it also defines the places by which energy can be transmitted. So on the one hand, it is both sending information, but it's also defining the boundaries by which information can be expressed. Precisely. I think you could engage in this practice with almost any material source, and that's something that's really beautiful. I like mushroom hunting. I think about fungus in a similar way. Fungus allows me to focus on the particular way in which an environment in a particular moment in time is materializing its own expression. That said, oil as a metaphor is a much stronger subject to focus on because of its proliferation in our daily lives. One of the arguments that I would make is that we have always already been seeped in oil. And this is, I think, very, very important. There's a lot of work being done in this regard at the moment. I think they'd fall into these disciplines of critical ecology or infrastructure studies, ways that people are looking at the role that infrastructure plays in shaping the potential expressions of any given environment. What's the difference between a house? Why does a bench arrive in the particular place that it does? How do intercontinental fiber optic cables and the politics that enable information flow across them figure into the way that we can experience information itself? It's, for me, a very interesting and active terrain of thinking that's happening right now. So I think we're pretty much out of time. I don't know if there's any last thoughts. Sure. Go ahead.